Welcome to World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. And as a result of the unfortunate results of the American election this past week, we are now facing a fascist seizure of power. Make no mistake, the only adequate comparison is October 1922, Mussolini's March on Rome, the founding of the fascist regime, the first fascist regime, the classical fascist regime, the one that was most imitated in other countries around the world. Il Duce, Mussolini. And let me just say some reading that you need to do. Well, first of all, you've got to get your hands on Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, available at Amazon.com. And then Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, also available at Amazon.com. Those are absolutely required reading. Both are doing very, very well this week, and I'm extremely glad also to announce that the German edition of Obama, the Postmodern Coup, has become the number 43 bestseller in all of Germany, at least on Amazon.de. So people in Switzerland, Austria, Germany, and Central Europe, about 100 million German speakers, have a chance to get informed. It is one of the top 50 bestsellers now, certainly above 100 for the past several days. It is the number one book on Obama, the number one book on American elections. Quite often beats Obama's self-serving, vapid memoirs about the mendacity of dope. So people are getting the lowdown. Those two books give you what you need to know. And, of course, you may want to supplement that with a biography of Il Duce, Mussolini. It's going to be essential to become familiar with the events of fascism, and we'll do a segment or two on that later in the program. So what we're talking about right now is a very narrow election victory for Obama. There is no mandate here to do anything. 52% is a pretty wretched result when you consider the tens of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of free publicity enjoyed by Obama the savior as a result of the trilateral Bilderberg Rand Corporation networks who made him and who own him, plus the $600 million that he was able to spend himself as a result of the bundlers for Barkey over at Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, J.P. Morgan Chase, and the rest of Wall Street. 52%, a wretched result, given all of that money poured in by the trilateral Bilderberg bankers, pretty much also accounted for through pure acorn and related vote fraud. We have been saying on this program that this time around is like 1976 when Mondale said, vote early, vote often. This is now vote fraud in favor of the Democratic candidate. Why? Because the Wall Street finance elite, the ruling class of the United States, made Obama into their chosen vehicle. He has, after all, been brought up by them, been trained by them over a period of about 25 years. He is a Manchurian candidate of the Trilateral Commission, and now you're going to find that out. And some people are finding it out already as a result of the first appointments, which we're going to get into. There is no landslide to be found. A landslide was Lyndon B. Johnson, 61% against Goldwater in 1964. And you can compare that also to the victory of Nixon over McGovern in 1972. You can compare it to Reagan defeating Carter in 1980, Reagan defeating Mondale in 1984. Those are landslides. Those are a mandate. This time, there's no landslide, and there is no mandate. 48% of the American people remain opposed to Obama. And I would say the American people remain anti-fascist. The United States is the anti-fascist nation par excellence, and nothing that Bush the Elder, Bush the Younger has done would change that. People were voting against Bush and Cheney. They were voting to express their hatred of Bush, Cheney, and the neocons. their resentment over dictatorship, over the Iraq war, the Afghan war, the 9/11 farce. And they're also expressing their fear of economic disaster. So the motivation is understandable. The only way to change that would have been to propagandize the theme of my books, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, and Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography. In other words, that a fascist is worse than a reactionary. Bush and Cheney, reactionaries. McCain, a reactionary. Garden variety Republican hack politician. Obama, worse, because he's a fascist with a fascist mass movement. Unfortunately, we're now going to get an object lesson in how that works. But the American people themselves do not despair. They are anti-fascist, remain anti-fascist, and this is what's got to be mobilized. And we will be doing everything possible here to promote a regroupment against this fascist regime. And we'll give you a series of specific points and a timetable on how to do this, and the methods, and the slogans you must use, and the slogans you must not use, because the reactionary Republican free market nonsense has struck out absolutely. That was what McCain tried to dredge up in the last phase of his campaign, and it didn't work. There's also no conclusion to the party realignment. This was going to be a party realignment election. It has not been, because no formula has emerged. There's no sociological coalition around Obama that is going to make it possible for another person in his tradition to win a future election. So there is no permanent realignment. There is no permanent result. The question of the party realignment remains wide open. You may say, well, look at all those young dupes who voted for Obama. Well, yes, a lot of members of the millennial generation born since about 1982 or so did vote for Obama, far fewer than the demagogic Wall Street media would have you believe. But those young dupes are now headed towards the biggest disillusionment, disappointment, and betrayal that their little young lives have ever experienced. And a lot of those young dupes will be hard to dupe again. They're going to be turned into hardened cynics by the time Obama is finished with them, and perhaps that is better to be a cynic than a dupe, I guess, in today's world. And indeed, the black community will be betrayed, stabbed in the back by Obama. And if you were a Muslim American, large majority voted for Obama, you've now got your wonderful reward. The warmonger Rahm Emanuel will be running the White House, the new Martin Bormann of the regime, the personal secretary and the controller of access. Rahm Bozo Emanuel of the Israeli Defense Force, a dyed-in-the-wool, reactionary, warmonger, thug, vicious politician, is going to be the dominant figure in the Obama White House. So congratulations to all the groups who were duped by Obama. Now it's time to wake up. Now it's time to learn the painful lesson that there are things that are much worse than Bush, Cheney, and the neocons. And by God, you're now going to see just what they are. So and to sum it up, it's a very narrow victory. There is no mandate. There is no landslide. The Republicans in the Senate retain, at least as of today, the possibility of filibusters. And remember, it would really take more than 60 Democratic votes to guarantee filibuster, simply because the composition of the Democratic Party still includes a lot of conservative blue dog Democrats, boll weevil Democrats, what do you want to call them, who will not go along with some of these measures. So it is time to mobilize, time to gird your loins, time to fight fascism in the United States.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Topley in Washington, D.C., a voice of the anti-Obama, anti-fascist resistance here in the United States, conducted on New Deal principles. The only effective attack on Obama is from his left. The neocon critique of Obama has struck out. That is what silly McCain, with his impotence and his cowardice, tried to do, and it doesn't work. You want to attack Obama, you want to defeat him, get to his left and attack him from there. He's not the New Deal. He's the anti-New Deal. He's not the new Robert Kennedy. He's the anti-Robert Kennedy. He's not the new Martin Luther King. He's the antithesis, the denial of everything that Martin Luther King stood for. So what we're calling for, let's put it on the table here right away, we're going to have to promote a broad-based convergence of anti-fascist forces. There's no other way to describe it. This goes all the way from conservatives over to leftists to New Dealers, and it includes some ultra-lefts that are going to be coming back in tears from the betrayals by Obama. And that would be, in particular, Rahm Emanuel. Let's just talk about that for a second before we go into the various points of this convergence. The new chief of staff of the White House, the new Martin Bormann of the regime, go and look up who that was if you don't know. You're going to need to know some German and Italian history of the 1920s and 1930s to keep up with events. But the new Martin Bormann is now Rahm Emanuel, and this character is a warmonger. Remember, he is the son of a member of the Menachem Begin Irgun, that is to say, of the group that blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem back in the 1940s. Most important, Rahm Emanuel volunteered. He said he became a member of the Israeli Defense Force during the first Gulf War. And that means he accepted service in the military forces of a foreign state. Now, I don't know when these laws changed, but it used to be when you got a passport, it would say if you become a member of the military forces of a foreign state, you could lose your U.S. citizenship. So maybe we're going to get an entire White House where we have nothing but non-citizens, not even dual citizens anymore. That was Bush and Cheney. Now it's going to be non-citizens, starting with Barkey, who is presumably born in Kenya and currently a citizen of Indonesia. And now we have Emanuel, who joined the Israeli Defense Force. So we're going to get quite an interesting combination. The most important thing about Emanuel, of course, is that he was in the Clinton White House. He is an egomaniac. He leaked. He betrayed Clinton on many occasions. You can even hear Dick Morris complaining on television that Rahm Emanuel was a traitor to the Clintons. When Dick Morris calls you a traitor, man, you are in bad shape. So this was a guy who would leak to make himself look good and make Clinton look bad. Barkey will rue the day, because this is not somebody who's loyal to Barkey. Rahm Emanuel is loyal to Rahm Emanuel and to nobody else. He's going to be a leaker. This is already a weakness in the new regime. We welcome it, because it's going to lead to a falling out among thieves at various points. But the interesting thing about Rahm Emanuel, remember that Obama won the Democratic primaries thanks to the fact that he claimed that he'd made a speech. Nobody's ever seen the speech. There's no text. There's no recording. But Obama claimed that he made a speech in the fall of 2002 opposing the Iraq war. Well, now Rahm Emanuel is a dyed-in-the-wool warmonger. This is somebody who can't wait to attack the next country in the Middle East. And the way we know this is that Rahm Emanuel, back in 2006, ran the Democratic Party money machine, the National Democratic Campaign Committee, and the general rule of thumb was that if you wanted to get money, if you were a Democratic House candidate in 2006 and you wanted to get money from Rahm Emanuel, you had to be a warmonger. The leading case of this was in Ohio, where we had Christine Sigelis, a liberal anti-war candidate who got no money in the Democratic primary, and Rahm Emanuel, Rahm Bozo here from now on, Rahm Bozo was a supporter of Tammy Duckworth. You may remember Tammy Duckworth. This was a poor woman who had come back from Iraq after losing her legs there. She was a paraplegic, and her argument was that she wanted to finish the job in Iraq. She wanted to pursue the Iraq war. And this, of course, meant that the entire Daily Kos Netroots or Nutroots community was incensed. They were inflamed with anger against Rahm Emanuel because he was supporting only warmongers in 2006. Here we have a guy called Kevin Spidell, quoted in today's Washington Post. Spidell says, there was a lot of frustration on the ground trying to figure out why the National Democratic Party was trying to squash a strong local anti-war movement around Sigelis by giving money to Tammy Duckworth. Tammy Duckworth then went on to lose the election by 3 points. The several hundred thousand dollars that Rahm Emanuel gave to Tammy Duckworth was all in vain. She didn't even come close. Somebody who did come close was, of course, Bob Bowen down in Florida, who came very close on an anti-war and 9/11 truth platform. And, of course, he never saw a penny from Rahm Emanuel and his thugs at the National Democratic Campaign Committee. Okay, well, so you, now you can see the color of the politics of Rahm Emanuel. Now, we're joined by one of our congressional candidates, someone who's done yeoman service, a tremendous fighter for all sorts of positive things in American society. I think you know him. I'm not going to spend time introducing him. It's Kevin Barrett speaking to us from Wisconsin to give us a report on his race and how he sees the future. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, good to be with you, Webster. I agree with you. Rahm Emanuel is definitely the new Martin Bormann.
All right, wonderful. So why don't you start off? Give us a quick summary of the results of your campaign, and then let's quickly look on to the future and what we need to be doing.
Well, I had a good campaign as far as educating people, got thousands of 9/11 Truth DVDs out there, got more media coverage than any other libertarian, actually, I think any other third-party candidate except for the presidential ones, definitely any other libertarian. So there was a pretty good media coverage overall. Unfortunately, it wasn't all good coverage in that sense. I got hammered by the Eau Claire paper, which is the biggest paper in the district, as well as the Wisconsin State Journal out of Madison, which covers the district. And I got moderately okay treatment in the La Crosse Tribune. The upshot of it was, though, that my race was on the map, but unfortunately, as you know, Webster, people got co-opted. A lot of people who were not happy with this bogus war on terror and the state of things got sucked into this Obama bandwagon, and I think they just voted down the ticket, which helped my opponent, Ron Kind, get reelected to yet, I think it was his sixth or seventh term. So many I lost count. Terrible thing. But anyway, it was a
productive
campaign.
Hang on one second, Kevin. I'm sorry. The music, we're just going to have to come back in 2 minutes, okay?
An hour.
Quicker than usual.
Okay, I'll be back in an hour.
Okay.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Radio, Webster Topley in Washington, D.C., reminding you that you will not understand anything happening around you unless you read the postmodern coup, Obama the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate, and Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, both available at Amazon.com, and the first, Obama the postmodern coup, currently the best-selling book on U.S. elections and Obama in all of Germany, Austria, and Switzerland on Amazon.de. So please get that. And there will be other editions in other countries coming out soon, I think, based to some degree on that success. So let's wrap up Rahm Emanuel. He's a warmonger, and he made sure that the only Democratic candidates who got any money in 2006 were warmongers. Now, this opens up many, many interesting contradictions. The people over at the Nutroots, the Daily Kos Kool-Aid drinkers, the people who followed CIA trainee Marcos Melitza Zuniga down the line, right? This is somebody, remember, who says the CIA is a humanitarian organization that he would have no problem working for any time in the future, and he was a trainee for them in the past. And, gosh, it brings up a lot of questions, doesn't it? Over at the Daily Kos, there, of course, tremendous consternation about the appointment of Rombozo. There are others. I think Rabbi Michael Lerner is not happy with this. There are any number of people who were sucked into the Obama vortex who have now realized what they've done. Oh, my God. The remorse begins already. Interesting conflicts. Rahm Emanuel's world quite clearly revolves around Israel. What does that mean for the relations with Zbigniew Brzezinski, whose world revolves around the destruction of Russia? These are not the same, and they contradict, in particular in regard to Iran, because Rombozo, based on his past record, would see Iran as a deadly enemy. Zbigniew Brzezinski sees it as a puppet state to be built up and played against Russia in a repeat of the Afghan war. The other interesting conflict is Rombozo and Howard Dean. Without Howard Dean, Barack Obama could never have gotten the Democratic nomination, because it was, of course, Howard Dean of Dean Witter who gave Obama all of those extra votes that he couldn't win, right? When Mrs. Clinton had actually won the Democratic primaries and won a majority of delegates, it was Howard Dean who came along and delivered the nomination into the hands of Barack. Rahm and Howard Dean hate each other with a passion. There's also, we read in the Washington Post today, the 2006 gains for the Democrats that claimed by Rahm Emanuel came at the cost of bitter feuds with party chairman Howard Dean, but also with members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Now, that's going to be interesting to hear about, the fighting between Rahm Emanuel and the Congressional Black Caucus. What is the mood today in the Congressional Black Caucus after Obama got them to vote for the bailout, and now he's stabbing them in the back with Rahm Emanuel and other candidates that Rahm Emanuel sabotaged and torpedoed back in 2006? He, of course, is a thug. He's a member of the Chicago, Illinois bipartisan combine. He's famous for this ranting. This is a speech more or less out of the playbook of Saddam Hussein or somebody like this, that he has no middle finger. He says that he got it cut off when he was working in McDonald's. Another story that he said is that he lost his middle finger when he was working for the Israeli Defense Force. We have the famous steak knife speech where Rahm Emanuel plunges the steak knife into the table every time he tells the name of one of his enemies and says, Joe X, dead, Marilyn Kay, dead, and so on down the line. We're told that Axelrod and Rahm are practically bosom buddies. I really doubt it. I don't think there's room for both of those overbearing personalities. This stuff, by the way, gets you back into the gerarchia, right, the gerarchy, the fascist hierarchy in Italy under Mussolini. You had a constellation of, 12, 15 people who were clearly parts of the leadership, Bottai and Ciano and so forth. And today you got Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel. And how about Howard Dean? Howard Dean is down and Rahm Emanuel is way up. So he plunges the steak knife into the table every time he tells the name of one of his enemies and then screams, dead. Sounds like the Illinois bipartisan combine. In other words, the mafia, the mob, the gang. And he sends a dead fish to one of his enemies. This is the Godfather, right? Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. Is this guy a figure of hope and change? Is he a bipartisan leader who's going to reach across the aisle? Obviously not. And it gets worse. This afternoon, Obama is going to give a press conference, as I'm taping this. I don't have the press conference in front of me. It's now 1:30 in the afternoon on Friday, the 8th of November. But he's going to be talking about economics. We're going to see the fawning, adulatory media whores of the Wall Street media establishment. But let's look at the economic group that Obama will be meeting with today. First of all, we know that in addition to Rombozo Emanuel, John Podesta will be one of the leaders of the transition team. Podesta, of course, from the Clinton White House, a hack and thug, more or less a garden variety. He has contributed to this think tank in Washington, the American something or other think tank. Anyway, that's his think tank over there. But let's look at the people in the Obama economic team. First of all, we have David Bonier, former congressman, former House Democratic leader from Michigan. This is somebody who obviously did nothing to save the automobile industry from its current crisis. We've got Warren Buffett, the plutocrat, the finance oligarch Warren Buffett, a right-winger normally, but he has come on board with Barkey. He has his ear, and he's going to tell him what the plutocrat community wants, the super rich and the rich. Then we have Roel Campos, former boss of the Securities and Exchange Commission, quite obviously a token Hispanic, not very much here for the Hispanics, I might say. William Daley, the brother of the thuggish mayor. This is a product, again, of the Illinois bipartisan combine. Democrats and Republicans united to steal from the American people. William Daley, Secretary of Commerce under Clinton, stabbed him in the back, went with Barkey. William Donaldson, former head of the Securities and Exchange Commission during the derivatives era. Roger Ferguson, the current head of TIAA CREF, an insurance company, as I believe, and a former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, the Fed. Jennifer Granholm, the current governor of Michigan, the current failed governor of Michigan, under whose suzerainty the economy of Michigan is sinking into the Great Lakes, as just today we've got a $3.5 billion loss, $2.5 billion, sorry, from General Motors, Ford announcing that they need 10% across-the-board cuts in the factory worker staff. Chrysler, of course, had cut about a quarter of their white-collar staff. This is the contraction. Jennifer Granholm has done nothing to do anything about this. Anne Mulcahy, the head of Xerox, is another of Barkey's economic advisors. Richard Parsons of Time Warner. There you get your Wall Street media whores. Penny Pritzker of the Hyatt fortune, of course, a very important fundraiser for Barkey. She's on the inside track. Robert Reich, the pathetic figure who was the Secretary of Labor under Clinton, who then became a Kool-Aid drinker for Obama, and he is now gravitating, I believe, towards the fascist corporate state. Robert Rubin, basically from Goldman Sachs, was the Secretary of the Treasury for Clinton and is now the chairman of Citibank, which is one of the black holes of the derivatives universe, a derivatives monster in deep trouble. We've got Eric Schmidt from Google, and you'll remember that Google is more of the control of CIA than Yahoo is. Larry Summers, we'll get to him in a minute. Laura D'Andrea Tyson, Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles, and Paul Adolf Volcker, who destroyed the U.S. industrial base. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We want to push ahead rapidly. We've got so much to tell as we gear up to fight fascism here in the United States. Hey, if Rahm Emanuel has no middle finger, can he give the Obama salute? The Obama salute, of course, was Barkey giving the finger to Mrs. Clinton during the primaries and then to McCain at the end of the election campaign. These are studied gestures, right? Mussolini had the Roman salute. That was then copied in Germany. What's the Obama salute? It looks like giving your opponent the finger. Or some might say the real Obama salute is the fork salute. Bernardine Dorn, back in 1969, pioneered the fork salute based on the Manson murders, which for her were the essence of the revolution. If that's not clear to you, read all about it in Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography on Amazon.com, and Obama, The Postmodern Coup, also to be found on the Internet at Amazon.com. So Barkey has the middle finger salute. Rahm Emanuel won't be able to give that salute. Let's just go back to the various hacks and thugs gathering today with Obama to discuss economic policy. We mentioned Penny Pritzker, Big Money Bags, Hyatt Fortune, Robert Reich, was in the Clinton Department of Labor. This is the guy with the symbolic analysis. He's confused, poor character. Robert Rubin, Goldman Sachs, Citibank today, Treasury. In the middle, this is one of the people who brought you the derivatives plague. He was one of the people who stopped Brooksley Bourne at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission from doing something to regulate derivatives. Rubin is a derivatives merchant, a derivatives monster. What kind of advice is he going to give? Eric Schmidt of Google, another barky economic advisor. Larry Summers, this is interesting. A gangster, talks like a gangster, was a protege of Rubin in the Clinton Treasury, then became Secretary of the Treasury. He's a thug. He acted against Russia during the 1990s. He was one of the enforcers of the shock therapy that caused untold human misery in Russia. They're digging themselves out of that one still today. He then went on, unbelievably, even though he's a gangster, to become the president of Harvard, and there he profiled himself as a sexist. He's the one who said that women are inferior, they can't understand science, and was driven out as the president of Harvard. How about the feminists out there? The feminists who supported Barkey. What a terrible thing. Now you're getting Larry Summers. He's mentioned now again for a return performance at the Treasury, even though he is also part of this derivatives plague, which is now destroying the world. There are 1.4 quadrillion of derivatives. It's now confirmed also by Marianne Hebdomadaire, the weekly magazine Marianne in France publishes 1.4 to 1.5 quadrillion, 1,000 trillion of derivatives. Laura D'Andrea Tyson, you'll remember her for her stylish designer scarves. She was one of the people in the Council of Economic Advisors of the Clinton White House, became the head of it. Antonio Villaraigosa, a Hispanic, another token Hispanic on the list, mayor of Los Angeles, had been for Hillary, moved over to Barkey. And then finally, the one who says it all, Paul Adolf Volcker, was the head of the part of the Treasury in the 60s and 70s, which was responsible for maintaining the value of the British pound for reasons of NATO solidarity. You couldn't let the British sink into the North Sea, so part of U.S. economic policy was to prop up the British. So he's the Anglophile side of the U.S. Treasury, not a good place to be. Then became a member of the Trilateral Commission, and along with Trilateral Jimmy Carter, Trilateral Walter Mondale, then became the nominee for the governor of Federal Reserve in 1979. He took the prime rate to 22 to 23% and destroyed the industrial base of the United States. Volcker destroyed more factories in the American Midwest than Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, Tojo, Mao, and everybody else put together. They were blown up in some cases. Volcker, the exterminating angel of world economic depression. He's even mentioned as a possible candidate for Secretary of the Treasury. It's unbelievable. He may be too old, but I don't know. And Roger Altman is another guy. Roger Altman is one of these hedge fund operatives, the bottom fishers from the Blackstone Group, that kind of stuff. Roger Altman, I think, had gone with Hillary in the primaries, but now gravitating towards towards Barkey. He's not on this list, but he's mentioned for Secretary of the Treasury. So if you're a peacenik, if you're a feminist, if you're a black activist sympathetic to the Black Caucus, look what Barkey has already done to you. The operative concept here is the Night of the Long Knives. Hey, the Night of the Long Knives. Strictly speaking, the Night of the Long Knives was a date in the history of the German National Socialist development. The Night of the Long Knives is simply this, that the fascist demagogue has got to dupe and use a whole series of groups of people that he incorporates into his mass movement prior to seizing power. But then once he's got his hands on the repressive levers of the state and enjoys this left cover, radical cover, anti-establishment cover, he can then turn around and dump and liquidate, in some cases, the dupes he has used as stepping stones to come to power. So there's a dialectical process here. In other words, it goes one way and then it goes back the other way. First you use them and then you liquidate them. Strictly speaking, the Night of the Long Knives corresponds to June 30th, 1934. That's something less than a year and a half after National Socialism came to power. Operation Hummingbird meant that the SS, an elite force, destroyed the leaders of the SA. So the black shirts destroy the brown shirts. Himmler and Heydrich liquidate Röhm and his gang at the Brown Shirt Organization because the brown shirts were talking about actually carrying through. They wanted a second revolution. What the second revolution meant to them was that they would become the Krupp and Thyssen, the bankers and industrialists. They would become the field marshals of the army instead of the career officers. And, of course, that was not going to go over well with the army and the bankers and the industrialists. So these people had to be machine guns. So that's the Operation Hummingbird, June 30th, 1934. With Mussolini, it's more instructive for us, as usual. I think the Mussolini parallel is the more heuristic one, because with Mussolini, the Night of the Long Knives comes slowly. It comes on the installment plan, and here's what I mean. Mussolini assumed power October 1922 with the March on Rome. Initially, he had to govern through a coalition government that contained fascists, but not in large numbers, similar to the Democratic Party today. Leadership, fascist, significant fascist caucus. But otherwise, you've got New Dealers in there, you've got Boll Weevils, you've got Blue Dogs, you've got Republicans running around in the Congress, too. Mussolini had a coalition of fascists, nationalists, liberals, meaning conservatives today, and Catholics, even a few Catholics. So he had to gradually ease them out. What did he do? Mussolini created a voluntary national service militia. That is virtually the translation of the Homeland Security Corps, which Obama is talking about creating. Obama also created a very sinister organization, the OVRA, the Voluntary Agency for the Repression of Anti-Fascism, OVRA, Opera Volontaria per la Repressione dell'Antifascismo. That sounds very much like the Green Corps, the Clean Energy Corps, the Homeland Security Corps. Obama's talked about a Classroom Corps, a Health Corps, a Clean Energy Corps or Green Corps, Veterans Corps, Homeland Security Corps. He wants to have a Senior Corps. I think that exists, but it's going to be geared up. America's Voice would be people who know foreign languages who would be geared up to promote color revolutions and subversion and coup d'etats in places like Russia, China, Sudan, Pakistan, and so forth. In other words, they'd hire you to be an Obama blogger over there in the same way that for Obama they hired him in Bangalore and the Gaza Strip to come over here. The AmeriCorps, which exists under from Clinton on, and VISTA, which is an older one, would also be geared up. So with Mussolini, it was the OVRA, O-V-R-A, the Voluntary Agency for the Repression of Anti-Fascism. And that, of course, was the model for the Gestapo. When Himmler and Heydrich came to power and they wanted to create the German secret police, who did they study? They went and met with the heads of the OVRA, O-V-R-A. There you go. And that's where we stand today. Now, the other things you need to know about Mussolini, we'll go through some of them in the second hour. You're going to need to know what the Aventine succession was, who Matteotti was, and basically the timetable, so you know that you've got to mobilize. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, beginning our second hour here. Webster Tarpley, your host in Washington, D.C. Let us now look ahead. The way to do this, of course, is to get Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of the Manchurian Candidate, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, both of those available at Amazon.com. That gives you the necessary conceptual arsenal to be able to deal with what's coming now. We're going into a period of acute crisis, and especially the 100 days to fascism of Obama, the New Deal in reverse. It won't be the New Deal. It will be the antithesis of the New Deal. It's what would happen if Mussolini had been elected here in 1932 and not the other way around with Franklin D. Roosevelt, the leading anti-fascist of the 20th century, I might add. So we've got to get ready for this. What is the nature of fascism? Now, it is, of course, to ride the anti-authoritarian, anti-establishment, left-cover mass movement of dupes, fanatics, Kool-Aid drinkers, fervently idealistic students, goons, thugs, hooligans, all controlled by Wall Street bankers, to ride that into power. Well, that's what we've got now. State power is at hand for this fascistoid, neo-fascist movement. And now what will they do? Well, the main thing that fascism has to do is to destroy the institutional basis for resistance to policies of war and economic sacrifice and austerity. This is what Bush and Cheney could not do. They could not destroy parties, unions, media companies, and various organizations. This is what Obama has done. Obama has basically destroyed the peace movement. Obama has basically destroyed the impeachment movement. Both of those were very powerful in late 2007. They have simply disappeared. They have been sucked up into the backwash of the Obama fascist conveyance. So let us now look ahead to how Obama will do this. With the case of Mussolini, it took from October 1922 to sometime in 1925 or maybe 26 to install a consolidated dictatorship. This is more like our calendar. Hitler was able to do this very rapidly. Hitler did it in the first two, three, 4 months. Essentially, all the opposition politicians were kicked out of the parliament, trade unions declared illegal, party shut down. They don't have that combination yet. So you got to look to the Mussolini example, as I explain in the book, from October 1922 to December 1925. That would be October 22, the March on Rome. In the following year, the creation of a voluntary national security militia, volunteer organization, and this voluntary agency for the repression of anti-fascism, the secret police, under a very nice sounding name. The other thing that Mussolini began to do is to tamper with the election laws, to fix the election laws by changing the way that people were elected. Now, today, the corresponding thing is to destroy talk radio and radio, including this radio, including Genesis Communications Network and everybody else who's in the opposition against Obama. The fairness doctrine, hate crimes, hate speech, and all the rest of this claptrap will be the chosen instruments to destroy institutional resistance to Obama's brand of fascism. In the case of Italy, then, we have the resistance coalescing around a single political figure, the socialist Matteotti. Matteotti was then assassinated by fascists working for Mussolini in 1924. In the same year, the opposition parliamentary forces left the Italian parliament at Montecitorio and moved over to one of the other hills of Rome, the Aventine Hill, and tried to hold out as an opposition counter-parliament. They were then crushed. So that by 1925, you get de facto one-party rule. By December 1925, Mussolini is declared head of government, no longer dependent on a parliamentary majority, and by 1928, the other parties are formally outlawed. There's only one party, the National Fascist Party, PNF, Partito Nazionale Fascista. And soon he's not even just head of government. He is Duce del Fascismo, the leader of fascism. So look at that as a possible template. Now, what do we need to do? We need to focus on assembling the broadest possible coalition of anti-fascist forces. Let's not worry about the name that will let people think about what this can be called. But we need to come together now fast on the basis of a series of things that we are determined to oppose. The program initially can be negative. I have a list of 9 no's. Let's see what you think about it. I'll be writing this up over the weekend, and it'll be available next week by the time many of you hear this. First of all, no honeymoon for the fascist corporate state. Secondly, no to restrictions on free speech, to censorship based on the fairness doctrine, hate crimes or hate speech laws. No to the fairness doctrine. Third point, no to militias, no to these voluntary service groups. They're going to put ACORN in uniforms and send them around to burn you out and destroy not just media outlets, but also internet resistance to Obama. This is totalitarian liberalism. Get ready for it. Gird your loins. We want to say no to the monstrosity of cap and trade based on the ridiculous Malthusian global warming fraud. I think we're going into one of the coldest winters in a long time. So by January, we're going to have, I think, a good consensus that global warming is a fraud and a farce, and we don't want any cap and trade. We don't want any carbon tax. The next no is no to free trade sellouts. We've had it with NAFTA, CAFTA, GATT, the World Trade Organization. We don't want any more runaway shop or exports of jobs from this country. Then, no to the looting of Social Security. This is an important point. You've got to fight for the economic rights of the American people, which are mainly left over from the New Deal. And you've got to get your head screwed on correctly in this regard. We don't need the Austrian school. We don't need Milton Friedman. We don't need the Chicago school. People who don't have health care and don't have food need food and health care, not lectures about the Austrian school, free market economics, and other lunatic mythology of free enterprise, which is something that has never existed on land or sea, at least since the end of the old Stone Age and the beginning of the new Stone Age. As long as you've got a state, you've got political economy. So it's political economy, meaning the government plays a role. The only question is, what role? So no to the looting of Social Security. This is Cramer on CNBC demanding $100 billion from the Social Security Trust Fund to prop up poisonous derivatives, toxic derivatives. And another big no, no to the confrontation with Russia, China, Pakistan, and Sudan. We are now going into the Polish missile crisis. This was immediately the one government in the world that was able to hang tough against Obama, Russia, Medvedev, and Putin. Thank God for the Russians. As Gideon Wells once said, he was the Secretary of the Navy under Abraham Lincoln. Thank God for the Russians. Thank God for a clear voice saying, not so fast, Barkey. Get those missiles out of Poland. Now, thought experiment for you Obamazoids or wavering figures. If Obama is such a breath of fresh air, if he's really the peace candidate, let him come out today, preferably in his press conference today, to say, we are calling off the installations of these missiles into Poland. If he's going to be president starting January 20th, no Polish missiles, no Polish missile crisis, no radar going into the Czech Republic, nothing of this sort. Let us back away from the obvious precipice of nuclear confrontation. Biden told us about this. Let Barkey now reassure everybody by saying that no missiles will be installed in Poland. Similarly, no attack on Pakistan, which Obama has called for. No attack on Sudan, which Biden has called for. No attacks on anybody. So that would be one big no. No to the confrontation with Russia, China, Iran, if you want, but I don't think there's going to be one, especially Sudan and Pakistan. And then finally, the wars. Obama wants to escalate the war in Afghanistan as a means, obviously, of destroying Pakistan. No to the wars. No to the Afghan war. No to the Iraq war. Stop those wars, Barkey. Announce right now what your timetable is. You talked about 6 to 8 months. Let's hear it. You ran as a peace candidate. Soon you're going to be the commander-in-chief of the wars. Announce that you're going to put an end to them. So let's repeat it all again.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Radio. We had a little technical glitch at the end of the last segment. Let me just repeat now very quickly the qualifying points of the Americans against fascism, Americans against fascism convergence that I think we need to promote. This is the Obama program. No honeymoon for the fascist corporate state. No to restrictions on free speech under the Fairness Doctrine, hate crimes, or any other pretext. No to fascist militias under any name you want to give them. No to bailouts. No to cap and trade or carbon tax, lunatic global warming legislation to strangle the economy. No to free trade. No to the looting of Social Security as demanded by Cramer of Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns. No to confrontation with Russia, China, Sudan, and Pakistan. And no to the Afghan war. No to the Iraq war. Stop these wars, Barkey, and don't have the Polish missile crisis. Now, we're honored to be joined once again by Philip J. Berger, Philadelphia, the courageous lawyer who practically single-handedly challenged Obama in the United States Supreme Court. And, Phil, welcome back, and maybe you give us a quick summary of where we stand and where you think we ought to be going.
Well, we have to get more and more people involved in this. This is really absurd that this person is president-elect when he does not meet the qualifications to be president of the United States. And with his associations, he doesn't even meet the qualifications to be a policeman, a Secret Service agent, FBI agent, anything else. I mean, it's really ridiculous. Our case was turned down for the injunction, which I thought they would probably do, but because I was asking for injunction to stay the presidential election. But to say the presidential election, they probably would have stayed all elections down the supervisor and school board. So I wasn't overly surprised. But our writ of certiorari is still pending before the United States Supreme Court, and the defendants have until December 1st to file a response. We're also getting a number of people to file a friend of the court or amicus curiae briefs to the United States Supreme Court. So, and that's important right now for us. In addition to that, we're going to be taking action, we're not exactly sure what, against the Electoral College, because no one was elected on November 4th. They just got more votes. The votes actually come through the Electoral College. So we're going to be working with that in the next few days. We're getting attorneys involved around the country, and we're trying to decide exactly what move we should make. But I did today file an action in federal court in Washington, D.C., under the, I got to get the right name of it, against Barack Obama under the, I'll give you the name in a minute, just drawing a little blank here for a second. Hold on.
Take your time, Phil.
But basically because I stated that he's not a citizen of this country, we're taking the far out position that he didn't know go through immigration when he was returned from Indonesia to the United States. And the action is called, the legal action is called a quin, I'm not saying right now, coming up on my computer. It's called a quitem. But the quitem, actually what it means for everyone else, including myself, it's a complaint pursuant to the Federal False Claims Act. And I'm taking a position that Obama is not a citizen, and therefore he has to return. Therefore, he cannot be a United States senator, and therefore all the money he's taken as a United States senator is fraudulent, and that his money should be returned to the Treasury of the United States.
Very good.
Now, what happens there is I am taking that on my behalf and on behalf of the government of the United States of America. What happens there is the U.S. attorney gets to make a decision to handle the case. He has 60 days to decide to take the case, and if in 60 days he doesn't, or before that if he rejects it, then I, as a citizen, can handle that case on behalf of the government. So I hope the U.S. attorney just turns it over to me, and then I will pursue it. And what I'm asking for there is the money to come back, but the relief I'm asking to get the money back, I'm asking that he produce his birth certificate, his vault birth certificate from Hawaii, his vault birth certificate from Kenya, which is, I think, is where it really is, and certified copies of all change of name court documents, his adoption records in Indonesia, a copy of the immigration form, which would be a certificate of citizenship when he came back to the United States. I believe he has that. If he has that, it's going to show that he is naturalized. And if it shows out that he is naturalized, it also then shows that he cannot be president of the United States because you have to be natural born. So I'm doing an end run on him right now. I'm taking any and every action to show, you know, to get the truth out. Because right now, what he's doing is he's just hiding and hoping that he can get sworn in January 20th before the truth comes out.
Congratulations, Phil. This is an extremely important flank. It can be decisive. It's absolutely legitimate. You're on very firm ground. He never produced the vault copy, the detailed version of his birth certificate. He's never answered these questions about being naturalized into Indonesia. So you are doing an important public service. I urge everybody to support Phil Berg. Go to that website, ObamaCrimes.com. And make a contribution. I've seen you've had some challenge grants put up there,
yeah,
and I'm sure you'll have more
grants
in the future. So people should not be stingy, because this is the defense of the Constitution, and it's clear that the McCain campaign has completely struck out on this. So let me ask you a question. You know, inside the system of classification of documents in the federal government, there's a classification called NOFORN. And that would mean no foreign officer, citizen, government official is allowed to see this, even within NATO or the various alliances. If I'm the head of the CIA for Obama and I walk into the room, or even now, if I'm Hayden or one of these people at the CIA, if I walk in and put a classified document that says no foreign in front of Obama, am I not committing a federal crime?
In my opinion, yes, because I believe that he is not entitled to be to look at these records because he's foreign-born.
So that would mean that some of these characters are risking felony indictments if they share state secrets with Obama, since Obama is not a citizen.
I believe so, yes.
I think this is probably worth – it's a good propagandistic point and perhaps more, because it begins then to – make some elements of fear come in. Remember, with the Bush people, we find out in retrospect that the Bush people were very afraid of prosecution after they left office, or even during. And that may be the case now with various people who are putting state secrets in front of Obama, who's been getting these classified briefings. If any no foreign are involved, then they could be guilty and head for Leavenworth.
I think that's perhaps why they didn't file any documents. The Obama people in our action at district court, because where they don't get you sometimes they get you on perjury, and I think that's what they're afraid of at this time.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Topley, here in Washington, D.C., and we're talking to Philip J. Berg of Philadelphia, who has performed a unique and invaluable public service by attempting to get the United States Supreme Court to clarify the issue of Obama's foreign citizenship and his disqualification to be president of the United States. So Phil has reminded us that even though the injunction was turned down by the Supreme Court right before the election, the writ of certiorari still is pending, and he has supplemented that with a quitem complaint under the False Claims Act. Phil, just in the brief time we have, what have you thought about expanding the political coalition behind these cases and more broadly the resistance against the Obama regime?
I'm sorry, say that again.
In other words, you're tired and you have good reason to be. You've been working very hard. In terms of reaching out to different groups to try to put together a coalition to try to expose Obama, to fight him, during the months ahead. Do you have any ideas in that respect?
Yeah, well, I've never had so much support from people all across the country. We've had several meetings, conference calls regarding how to handle the Electoral College. There's a group out trying to put together an ad for the full-page ad for USA Today. We need like $90,000, so if anyone wants to contribute to that. We have to broaden our base. You know, maybe 2, 5, 10 million people know about this, but there's got to be at least 50 million people that would take our viewpoint, our side, if they only knew about it. So we're doing everything in our power to proceed, you know, to get people out there. And we're thinking about putting together a petition. We're thinking someone else came up an idea that have a flyer. We'll probably put a flyer on our website which people can download, copy in their areas, and hand it out to more people. So we're in the process the next few days of doing a lot of things. So just people should come to ObamaCrimes.com. Look at it, see what we're doing, and, you know, help us out, participate, and also make a contribution.
Okay, Phil. Now, at the end of August, when you first went into federal court, we invited you to be on this program basically every week, and I think from then until the election, we had you every time except maybe one or two. And certainly we're now looking ahead to January 20th and trying to change that result. I hope you'll stay with us and come on weekly, if at all possible, between 1 and 2 now on Friday afternoons.
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure.
All right. Wonderful. So thank you, Phil Berg. Phil, if you want to stay around, we're going to have Kevin Barrett come on, but that's up to you. I know you're very busy.
I was in court all morning on one of my own cases. So I have a lot of catching up to do.
Okay, fine. So we'll see you next week then. Thank you so much for coming on.
And thanks
for
your
Phil Berg, ladies and gentlemen. That's ObamaCrimes.com. And go there and give him a contribution. Look, here's the other thing. We've got Americans Against Fascism and the Nine No's. No honeymoon. No fairness doctrine. No militias. No bailouts. No cap and trade, or carbon tax, no free trade, no looting of Social Security, no confrontations with Russia, China, Sudan, Pakistan, no wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, stop them. And above all, Barkey, head off the Polish missile crisis. Medvedev has issued a bright, clear warning. Let's turn away from the path of confrontation. If you're not a neocon, Barkey, time to show it. So let's get busy on that. Now, in terms of the timetable for all this stuff, we're in a three-phase timetable, I would submit. The first is from now until January 20th, and that is the transition. And this is two big things we've got to do. There's going to be a New Bretton Woods conference. That's really an obscenity. It's not a New Bretton Woods conference. It's a Basel III. It's a conference to make the world safe for derivatives. It's to base the entire world economy on derivatives. That's going to be in Washington now in about 10 days. The only thing to do with that conference is to make sure it does not succeed, that it flies apart, because we've got to promote a front of Russia, China, Brazil, Indonesia, South Africa, Nigeria, Argentina, Venezuela, everybody who's got legitimate economic interests in the real world to fight the derivatives powers. In other words, what's going to happen to the world economy, I would think, is an Anglo-American dominated derivatives block and an anti-derivatives block. So the anti-derivatives bloc is the one that will guarantee the future of humanity, and that's going to be led by Russia, but also by some of these other countries, China and so forth. So that's one element in this transition phase. The other thing is a lame duck session of Congress without Obama, but with Pelosi and Reid attempting to use the votes of defeated political hacks, people who have already lost their seats, to pass very unpopular bailout legislation, maybe another round of subsidies for the derivatives pirates and so forth. So there's also a question of these appointments going on, right? You've got Rahm Emanuel, Podesta coming in. You've got the question of who's going to be Secretary of State. Will it be the mad bomber of Serbia, Richard Holbrooke? Will it be the effete snob married to the daughter of Portuguese fascists, John Forbes Kerry of the Boston Brahmins? Will it be another mad bomber of Serbia, Wesley Clark? Who will it be? Will Gates stay on at the Pentagon, a Brzezinski man left over from his time as office boy for Brzezinski during the Carter administration? Who's going to be Secretary of the Treasury? Will it be Volcker? Will it be Rubin? Will it be Summers? Will it be Altman? Which of these derivatives bandits is going to get in at the Treasury? We've got to expose do everything possible to fight back against these characters in this time between now and the 20th of January. Then, gird your loins, 100 days to the fascist corporate state, 100 days of living hell from January 20th to May 1st approximately. That will be a great defensive battle. Do we have the ability to block Obama's legislative agenda? It's going to be a collection of monstrosities. New bailouts for Goldman Sachs and the Wall Street derivatives bandits, cap and trade system to strangle the economy. We've got to be mobilized and ready to try to do everything possible to promote partisan gridlock, prevent Barkey from bringing the Congress together around what amounts to the program of the fascist corporate state. We warned you here, if you get the repo clique, read Pelosi Obama. That is the full fury of the fascist corporate state. So get ready to fight between January 20th and May 1st. They're going to try to impose militias to dominate the streets, and they're going to try to impose the fairness doctrine to destroy the possibility of a radio-based opposition, including this one. Then, if we can finally get through the 100 days, then a battle over the next 2 years to November of 2010, where we've got to be ready with congressional candidates, propaganda, and some kind of organized resistance against the Obama coalition, because that is the moment when the popular resentment against Barkey will flare up. You've also got to overlay on that the 6 months to confrontation that Biden talked about in Seattle on the 19th of October. Remember the possibility of false flags. Now that you have Bush and Cheney out, Barkey Obama in, the door to false flag terrorism is opening again, because you've now got somebody that many dupes around the world might believe. If he says a bomb went off, country X did it, it's Russia, it's China, it's Sudan, it's Pakistan, we are now going to invade them. This now becomes a real possibility once again, whereas under Bush and Cheney it had not been, and under McCain it wouldn't be. So congratulations to those who voted for Obama, who should have known better if they've heard it on this program. And, of course, the first 12 months, the economic policies of the regime will be so unpopular and so hated that there will be a collapse in the polls. We'll be back in just a second on World Crisis Radio.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Crisis Radio, pushing ahead now, dealing with an imminent fascist seizure of power here in the United States. Let's talk about economics. Today, Obama is announced to have had telephone conversations with leaders of the following countries: Australia, Great Britain, Germany, France, Canada, Israel, Japan, Mexico, South Korea. Notice no Africa, no third world, except Mexico, which is now part of the free trade zone. No Russia, no China, no Brazil, no Venezuela, no Argentina, no India, no Indonesia, no South Africa, no Nigeria. No third world, except the one token Mexico. These are all IMF countries, and that gives you an idea which way the wind is blowing. Also, Timothy Geithner, the head of the New York Fed branch, really the boss of the entire system. This is a proponent of Kissinger Associates, trained by Kissinger. He could become Secretary of the Treasury. It gets worse and worse. Today it's announced that during October, 250,000 jobs were destroyed. Unemployment has now risen from 6.1% in September to 6.5% in October. That is just for starters. This is now the contraction phase of a world economic depression. It actually could go to deflation. Man, oh, man, if it's deflation, get rid of that debt, because it's going to be really hard to pay back if we go into deflation. Man, it's going to be rough. General Motors announces a $2.5 billion loss for the third quarter. Ford announces 10% across the board job cuts among its auto plant workers. The question now is, should General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford be saved? Yes. Yes. Don't tell me about free markets. $50 billion is a little enough to pay to maintain those indispensable, unique assembly lines and machine tool capabilities. The tool and die capabilities of those three companies are an irreplaceable, precious national asset. Don't tell us about free markets, the Austrian school, what Milton Friedman and the Chicago Boys and the Montpelier and Society want. We've got to save the industrial infrastructure. As a matter of fact, turn the entire thing around. No cheap federal credit for Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, AIG, Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. In other words, stop all these payments to banks, stockbrokers, insurance companies, money market funds, and mutual funds. Channel the cheap federal credit into the productive sector. That's the main demand that we have. Cheap federal credit for the Main Street lending facility. 0.5% to 1% for these automobile companies. Make it 0%. 0% loans. Force the Fed to do it and use that as a stepping stone to the full nationalization of the Federal Reserve. Make it into a Treasury Bureau and force them to issue credit for production to physical commodity, hard commodity, real, physical, merchandise, production, as well as mining, as well as commerce and real infrastructure building. And this, of course, reminds us, one of the reasons the resistance to Obama failed was because of the lunatic free market doctrine, something that has not existed on land or sea since the close of the old Stone Age. The 19th century knew that it's a matter of economics and government. They therefore talked about political economy and national economy. The impact of Milton Friedman and von Hayek and these other clowns has been to obscure that fundamental fact. There is no such thing as an independent free market. And, of course, the Wall Street people have shown us that. The same people like Kudlow on CNBC who have been prating about free market capitalism for lo these many decades, as soon as the $700 billion came into view, they ran to get their share. Nobody believes in free markets except pathetic suckers. It is a slave ideology. And if you try to fight Obama based on free market ideology, man, will you fail. You will be gone. Obama will run rings around you because he's going to say, oh, well, I'm an economic populist. The people who tried to go into the elections in 2007, 2008, who talked about free markets, have been uniformly defeated because they have no element of economic populism. And I'm reminded of these crazy Republican ads that we had here in Virginia saying, if you vote for Obama, government-sponsored health care is on its way. Hallelujah! Said many of the 50 million who don't have any health care, for whom government-sponsored health care would be a great thing. Remember, if you thought that the private sector would provide health care, they had their chance. For 40 years, we've had reactionary Republican domination with a few exceptions, and they have struck out. If there are 50 million people today without health care, that is the result of the private sector. That is the result of the free market, because Newt Gingrich and company and Ronald Reagan came in saying that government is always the problem, the private sector will provide the solutions. Well, it has not. Too bad if you died in the meantime. And the fact that you died for the free market is no consolation. So here's a point where we're going to have a theoretical debate about this. And if you're going to tell people, fight Obama and we'll take away your Social Security, your Medicare, your Medicaid, your food stamps, your unemployment benefits, your Head Start for your kids, and your WIC for expectant mothers, that is a loser. Can't people see that? Who in his right mind is going to be interested in that? So the answer to this stuff is not a return to Herbert Hoover economics, and certainly not a return to Mussolini economics. It's the alternative to all of those. The leading anti-fascist economic school is the New Deal. The New Deal is what crushed fascism around the world, what kept the Soviets in the war with Lend-Lease, even though they did most of the fighting. Without the U.S. economic mobilization, fascism would have ruled the world. So we're now back to that. Fascism or New Deal? Those are the choices. Deal with it. Study the New Deal, including through my books, Obama the Postmodern Coup, Barack H. Obama the Unauthorized Biography, and you will see that the left, moderate left, attack on Obama is the effective one. The right-wing troglodyte attack, which we've seen with McCain, the redistribution argument is a failure. Obama's not going to redistribute wealth to poor people. He's redistributing wealth into the pockets of Soros, Rockefeller, Goldman Sachs, and the rest of them. And that is the sinister aspect of Obama. So I think this is the situation, and let's just reiterate now, Americans against fascism, you've got to get ready for this, the nine no's. No Obama, no honeymoon. No fairness doctrine, keep free speech. No militias, we don't want any of them. No bailouts, not in the lame duck session and not in the nightmare of the 100 days. No cap and trade, neither do we want a carbon tax. Global warming is a fraud. We're headed now into one of the worst winters in a long, long time. Maybe that will clear the air. No to free trade sellouts. No looting of the Social Security Trust Fund. We want to defend it. Same thing goes for Medicare and Medicaid. No entitlement reform. Maybe that's a better way to put it. No entitlement reform. Keep your economic rights that were won with tremendous mass struggles back in the 1930s. No confrontations with Russia, China, Sudan, or Pakistan. No wars, not Iraq, not Afghanistan, not anywhere else. And we should probably have something in there about civil liberties, but I think we've got it. So in other words, what we want to do is to block the fascistization of society, which amounts to the systematic destruction of those popular institutions and other institutions that can provide a basis for resistance. This is what Bush and Cheney could not do. They could not impose a top-down fascistization of the United States. They didn't have a fascist mass movement. They didn't have left cover. They were the establishment. They had no anti-establishment cover. So what you've got to do is get a working concept of fascism. Don't call Obama a socialist. That's practically doing him a favor. He's nothing of the kind. A lot of people who are going to be starving with no health care in the dark this coming winter, we're going to say socialism. That sounds wonderful. Let's give that a try. Couldn't be worse than Bush and Cheney. The only adequate term is fascism, be it neo-fascism, postmodern fascism, social fascism, you name it. Read all about that in Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, both at Amazon.com. And we'll be back next week, fairness doctrine permitting.